Blog Talk Radio.
Family, once again, we welcome you to the Thursday night Us Lifting Us Dare to Win call. And like every week, we have some very vital information tonight, and we want you to join us, to listen in, take notes, very much take notes, and participate in the conversation. And we're here every week with vital conversations, and we ask you, the listening audience, that by telephone and heard on internet radio and heard around the world, that if you have any vital topics and you would like to be a guest speaker, make sure that you contact Us Lifting Us, and you can contact us by emailing us with your suggestions, or you know some sister or brother that has some vital information that we need to share with the people, and you can email us at info@usliftingus.com, info@usliftingus.com. And we're here every week to have a sober discussion about the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact method that's actually getting better and better, an exact method of gaining economic and political self-determination. We are building the global machinery for our economic freedom and sovereignty, and the methodology to pass it forward to future generations. Family members, tonight we have another powerful and vital subject. Please take notes. Please participate and pass it on to the community. And keep in mind that these conversations that we have every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till 10 p.m. is archived on Blog Talk. Tonight's the topic is, what is the harm report? And how does it relate to black liberation? Once again, what is the harm report, and how does it relate to black liberation? And I am Brother Thurman, and I'm an Us Lifting Us member, and joining us tonight is a very valued Us Lifting Us member, Brother Shabaka. Brother Shabaka, how are you doing, and greet the audience.
Yeah, greetings, Brother Thurman. Greetings, family. I am doing well. And, you know, it's always a pleasure when I get together with you. We really try to get the information out, get people thinking, and hopefully acting as well. But I'm doing well, and thank you for asking.
All right. Thank you. And family, we want to, the time is limited, so we want to get right into this topic, very vital information. And Brother Chewbacca, for the listening family and the audience, tell us what the harm report is.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Thurman, for that question. I really appreciate the opportunity to shed some light on it. In late 2020, NCOBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, commissioned a team of researchers, which was led by Dr. Joan Kaufman from the Kennedy Krieger Institute at Johns Hopkins Medical Institution located in Baltimore, Maryland, all right, to do a report on the ongoing, remember now, ongoing, not stop, not historical, ongoing impact of historical trauma, starting with the transatlantic slave trade, including Jim Crow, racial discrimination, mass incarceration, frequent at-will police brutality and killing, and, of course, the economic exploitation on the current physical and psychological state of African-Americans or Africans in America that we have today. What Dr. Kaufman did, citing current research on the topic of transcendental epigenetic, all right, came across that there's still and continues to be injuries that is sustained on the current African population in America since the advancement of slavery initiated by the European organizations and countries on up to the present time.
That is very serious information, brother, that you opened up with. Family members, please pay attention and make sure that you pass it on, that this will be archived on Blog Talk. Brother Chewbacca, you introduced some big words to us. Let's try to break down some of the terminology. What is epigenetic transgenerational, epigenetic, and how epigenetics, and how did Johns Hopkins Medical Institute get involved?
Yeah, again, Brother Thurman, really thank you for that question. As always, you're right on point, and you keep us on our toes, and I really thank you for the follow-up questions. Let me start with the last question first. I'm a member of NCOBRA, have been for a number of years, and it is my understanding when the report was commissioned that none, now here it is, none of the black medical institutions and schools which were contacted responded to NCOBRA's request for the study. It only came about as a consequence of a sister who was part of NCOBRA, connected to NCOBRA, who informed members of the board, and particularly its EC, you know, that there was a young Jew, not young, but a Jewish woman at the Johns Hopkins Hospital who had done similar kind of works and studies and was involved in stuff in dealing with the Jewish Holocaust. Now, let's get back to the first two. All right, so the black institutions didn't help us. That's what they said. That's what we try to do. We try to contact with them because at the time we saw the impact of COVID and the disproportionate impact it had on our population. All right. Coming about as a consequence of this information on research in epigenetics, all right, we felt a need that at least our people, our institutions, at least we thought they were our institutions, should be the first to begin to examine this, investigate this, research this. Now, in the first two, you asked about what is epigenetics? Well, in simple terms, epigenetics essentially means changes, you know, chemical changes that's in our DNA. And what I mean by that, you know that you have a DNA structure, and what differs my DNA from your DNA is the way in which that DNA is sequenced. Now, sequence is what the current biologists, you know, do in order to examine the variations that they have been able to identify, all right, in a DNA code, all right. And so, therefore, if you take and go into a cell that's in my ankle, and you go down into that DNA, you know, and extract the DNA material, you find out that it's sequenced the same as if you took a cell and looked at the DNA structure in my heart. Now, the heart tissue or heart cell, all right, differs, all right, from the cell that's in my legal ankle, all right, but they have the same sequence, all right. So that suggests that inside of the DNA in the respective areas that they are in the cells, all right, they have different information to produce proteins. The proteins that give me my heart tissue and the proteins that give me my ligaments and leg tissue in my ankle. All right, but they're the same, such that if you took DNA from you, even though it's from your ankle, and similar kind of structure to put together your ankle, all right, if you inject that into my body would resist it. Now, what the scientists have found out is that in the DNA that's in our body, all right, the trauma not changes the sequence, but it changes the information that is transmitted among the cells, all right, causing abnormalities. Consequently, if, and you probably heard of this just from COVID, you heard of the vaccine that's supposedly an mRNA vaccine, all right, or it's not really a vaccine, it's just a genetic treatment, all right. The mRNA, the M star stands for messenger. RNA is the genetic material that leaves now, all right, and this is its primary purpose. The RNA material leaves, all right, the center of the cell, all right, and go out, all right, and then hit what they call a chromosome. In other words, it leaves the nucleus of the cell, which is where the genetic material is housed and kept. It goes to the chromosome, all right, area of that cell, and gives it instructions on the production of protein. So that means even though we have the same sequence in my body and cells throughout my body, all right, each cell is fitted with information, all right, to produce proteins that is necessary to build the materials and the organs in the particular area where they are. All right. So that's what the cells do. The epigenetics is the study of trauma, how it inhibits the ability of the information that is transmitted in your, one of them would be via messenger RNA. It's not transmitting the information correctly, such that instead of putting proteins, you know, to produce and make cells, it may inadvertently, all right, produce and assemble fatty material, which why you see among some of us, in fact, just about all of us in this country, the abnormality of obesity, all right? But you find out in a disproportionate manner that black people are more obese than we find other populations, other ethnic groups inside the country. Now, so that's epigenetics. It's just a study of the changes that happens associated with the DNA over a couple generations. All right. In other words, we still see the same. We see the same material, or we see the same happening over more than just a mother to child. Transgenerational means that this is information. These are changes that we can see in long stems of generations. And let me give you an example. As I mentioned a little earlier, I talked about the Jewish Holocaust. What science? Remember that the Germans were all into this science. In fact, the U.S. had grabbed some of the German scientists. They killed some, German doctors, but they also took some of those scientists and brought them back here. All right, and it's a reciprocal kind of relationship because Hitler looked at the studies and information that John D. Rockefeller was doing at the turn, you know, of the 20th century. All right, and it's research in genetics, and later on the research in syphilis. All right, particularly syphilis as it was as it looked at it. In the Tuskegee experiment, but syphilis was first introduced to the populations of Southern Europeans who were coming over here looking for a good way of life in the U.S. And so they were, as far as the WASP, which is White Anglo-Saxon Protestants, were concerned, they was all lower. They, in fact, they weren't white until it became advantageous for them to start calling these folks from Europe white in order to reduce, the black population's concentration in the United States. All right, so they were doing those experimentations, so it was a back-and-forth thing. Hitler learned from the U.S., and the U.S. learned from looking at what was going on from its own scientists. But anyway, to bring the story off, the scientists were doing a lot of research on some of the Jewish Holocaust victims. What the scientists learned as a consequence, all right, is that there were certain peculiarities that they saw coming from the survivors of the Jewish Holocaust. But not only that, they saw the same transmission of these anomalies also in the offspring, all right, which would have been the population now for people, you know, in their 60s through 80s, but also even in their offspring, which would now be, you know, like children out of our children of our age. Children of the ages that we have right now, so it was only they saw this the behavior they saw this in the Holocaust victims, and of course they ran studies in mice, and what they recently they genetically modified mice. When I say genetically modified mice, they gave some of the mice some characteristics, and they can do a lot of science. We are on the tip of the iceberg of the science that these Europeans are doing, that the government is funding, that the Fauci and his institution are funding, all right, in order to begin to understand and to weaponize a lot of stuff that comes out of their research. Well, epigenetic transgenerational trauma is one of the things that they were working with. And so they looked at mice, and then they start similar characteristics for coming out of the Holocaust victims, and saw that there were certain anomalies that was transmitted over generations, particularly with the Jewish Holocaust survivors. And so that's what it is. So transgenerational just means many generations. And we have been able, I mean, when I say many generationals, we're talking about generations going back to the enslavement period on up to the present time, all right, the enslavement period on up to the present time, in the same fashion, now hear me now, that we know that there's certain peculiarities that we sometimes see when we're around Jewish people, all right, how they act, how they look, and stuff like that, all right, over just in the last 70 to 80 years, all right, that we have noticed this, or that the scientists have noticed this, we can go back, you know, over 200, 300 years and identify markers that currently represent emotional trauma and expressions in our people today. I hope that touched a little bit on the question you asked.
Oh, yes, brother. You touched quite a bit, and thank you for that explanation. And can you give us more about what bad health effects have been linked to epigenetic trauma? Get us to understand that subject, that area.
Yeah, thank you, brother. That's a very good question. All right, I've talked about the Holocaust victims. I talked about research that ran into mice where they noticed that, you know, from parent to grandparent down to the grandchildren of the mice and what have you, they noticed certain characteristics. Well, some of the bad things that you had linked to is that Western medicine, particularly Western scientists, tends to try to link mental and substance use disorder to trauma. In other words, they say, well, you have trauma, and it's fortified by your substance abuse. And as a consequence, it generationally pushed as a consequence of the substance abuse. However, in our children, you know, think of our children now, you will notice a disproportionate increase in obesity, as I mentioned earlier, diabetes. We have kidney disease. There's so many. Our people have a disproportionate share of kidney disease, and we're on dialysis. All right, keep that in mind. You know, we eat these foods, but you know, why are we more subject to get on dialysis than the other members in this society? All right, we have breathing disorder, liver disorder, heart trouble, number one killer, cancer, number two killer. All right, they are some of the negative effects that we see. And I'll give you an example. All right, we notice, or rather the scientists have noticed in the study that was put together by the team from Johns Hopkins, what they noticed is that in certain mice, when injected with certain kind of dew and then subjected to trauma. Now, I'm not sure how the scientists, you know, those in zoology, you know, identify trauma, but they know that they can introduce something frightening to the mice, maybe show them a cat or something like that. I don't know how it does, and repeatedly do this. All right, and eventually, the cat will respond in a certain way. Don't let the cat kill the mice, but then it produces a lot of trauma because, you know, when we are stressed out, we have what is called that fight or flight, all right, instinct. In other words, I look at the situation when I'm stressed. Is it something that I can deal with and fight through? And remember now, the stress is not supposed to last very long. And if you're constantly under stress, you know, you will get messed up. Or is it something that I can run away from to avoid because I have assessed at least that immediate condition and see that I can't win this fight. So I'm going to get the hell out of there. You'll have that. Now, let me give a real good example that people can appreciate. Mr. Williams, that's Venus and Serena Williams' father. He mentioned, all right, in an interview one time. In fact, he mentioned it to his daughter and later mentioned it in an interview. He was born in Louisiana. And in Louisiana, in certain parts of Louisiana, I think it was around Shreveport. But anyway, you get the gist of it. A black person could not physically touch a white person in the same way that a black man could not look at a white woman for fear of losing his life. Well, a black man could not, all right, touch a white man. So apparently what I believe happened is that Mr. Williams got some money from his father who owed it to a white man. And so either Mr. Williams' father had experienced accidentally maybe touching a white man and got beat like hell and didn't want to experience it again. So he gave it to his son. His son attempted to give the money to the white man and accidentally touched him and was beaten severely. and his son and the father ran away. And so I think he was telling the story, as I understood it, to Venus because he wanted to show that he was always going to be around and wouldn't run away when things got tough. But the thing that I wanted to illustrate is that the son was beaten as a consequence. Now, I'm sure that wasn't the first time, and probably he has seen his father get beaten from the same mistake and other things. Now, look in your mind that you're witnessing these things, which means I can't touch that white man. Let me say that again. During that time, in my mind, I know that I cannot touch that white man. And the fear of taking every precaution that I can, all right, not to touch that white man if I'm in his presence or the white woman. Make sure I don't look at the white woman because I could be lynched for that. Now, imagine the continuation of seeing that as a child, being instructed what to do, and constantly under that fear as long as you're in that environment. And then you marry and have kids of your own. That fear is not going away. It's still there. It then becomes in the womb of the woman. The fear of the woman that you may somehow not come home. I want you brothers and sisters to imagine this. You know, these are the things that we are experiencing, which is why not only did we need the Jewish Holocaust, all right, but we found out that from the mice and to other groups that were also examined, that this trauma existed over generations. And we have pinpointed that it existed all the way down to what we call the transatlantic slave trade. Now, equally important is this. What Ancobra, in taking out this thing, was trying to do at the time, based on my understanding, was to have solid, concrete information, all right, to demand from the U.S. government, not an apology, all right, but the resources, all right, to correct the trauma that they have licensed to sustain over hundreds of years, and to be able to appeal to maybe the judicial system, or rather the judicial system here, or the UN or the special court, in order to get some remediation as a consequence. All right, because it was also understood, and I learned from the report, you know, that these things could be remedied, but you have to cease. That which creates the trauma has to stop, and then you have to treat, you know, the injuries with nutritional kinds of things, and definitely in order to remove the obesity that we are impacted with, as well as some other things. So let me stop there, just in case you had a follow up question or somebody might want to ask a question.
Yes, thank you, brother. Very powerful, vital information. And family members, if you got any questions or comments, you can reach us by telephone at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad. And Brother Shabaka, this is just such very important, powerful information. And I'm anxious to hear more. And thank you for what you just presented. And you mentioned earlier that transgenerational epigenetic trauma is passed down through generations. I am assuming that you mean more than just from mother to child. And how do we know this?
Yeah, thank you for that follow-up question again. Yeah, let me try to address that in this way. As I mentioned, the most of the experimentation were done with mice, all right? And these are research that has been done by scientists with mice. They noticed the anomaly initially with passing down when examining some of the victims in the Jewish Holocaust, all right? And they recorded these things, all right? In addition to recording these traumas that they see that is transmitted generationally, all right, they notice that certain, protocols were used in order to treat the traumas that they existed in subsequent generations, all right? And they notice, so that means then the removal of certain toxins that the trauma took advantage of and maybe sustained in our system that would normally be easily oxidized and passed through. The poor nutrition, it noticed that when the nutritional values were improved in the mice, as well as when they saw that in observing generations of people, they noticed that there was less likelihood to see the appearance of the trauma. All right. All right, so to answer your question, they observed in mice the trauma, and then other animals that were using, but they used mice because, like I said, when they doctored up on the mice, you know, gave their particularly, in fact, they used a few, not many, mice during this COVID thing. All right, what they did was created in mice genetically altered lungs. All right, so this was an experiment that was going on in Wuhan, and they noticed how the SARS-CoV-2 responded, you know, by looking at its spike proteins as it began to attack the lung surface. All right, so they looked at that, all right, and they noted in the mice, a few mice, all right, and that allowed them in that examination, supposedly, you know, we got to be suspect of any of the things that is reported. Unfortunately, if our scientists weren't too cowardice, you know, we could look more thoroughly at those things as they affect us, all right, as a group of people, all right. But anyway, they noticed that in the mice. They noticed that it passed down from generations, and they recorded that information, and consequently, they were able to come up with epigenetics, which means changes to the DNA patterns, all right, of expressions. And, of course, the transgenerational just means they've seen it over many generations over time. I hope, brother, that might clarify that little bit of information for you.
Yes, it does. And now the $64,000 question, what does all of this have to do with racial subjugation and black liberation?
Yeah, brother, it's difficult to get anything over you, but thank you for the question. Yeah, that's a very important question. And if some of our members who are listening didn't pick it up, let me go on into that to address your question. All right. When we look at health and well-being of Africans, we find out that it's impeded and negatively expressed when we look at the history of slavery. I gave you an example of an experience in the Jim Crow era, you know, with the Mr. Williams, Elder Williams, of the father of Venus and Serena Williams. All right, but now, if that happened during the Jim Crow period, you know, and discrimination period on up to the present time, what kind of traumas were we experiencing back in the slave period? All right, mm-hmm. Now think about that for a minute. So we know that there was lynching. All right. We know that a slave master could kill you at will, although not necessarily wanting to, because you were an investment. You were his property, all right? But if he needed to make an example, off goes your head or off goes your body, because he'd tie you to four different horses going in different ways, you know, so. Mm. And then he would have the Africans who were enslaved witness this, creating fear. Mm. He would open up a woman who's pregnant. All right, and killed the baby, all right, and made all the women look fear. Now, so we can imagine that there were some horrible things that was done to us, and of course, when you say that maybe 40 to 60% of those people who were captured, kidnapped in Africa on the slave ship, all right, died as a consequence before reaching a destination over here, all right? Mm. And if you happen to reach your destination over here, you saw what happened on the slave ship. So, I mean, I could go on and on, all right? And brothers and sisters, I'm not making excuses. You know what happened. You know also the impact of trauma when a cop stops you, all right, makes you come out of the car, insults you, all right? I even do that now. And I, you know, cops don't stop me that much now because I'm an old man, but they did when I was younger. When you see a cop call a car, you know, you freezes up. You say, is he going to pull me over? Is he going to interrogate me? Is he going to abuse me? All right. All right. Violate my rights as a human being. See, you think that it hasn't happened yet. All you did was see the cop car. You understand what I'm saying, Brother Thurman? You just seen the cop car, and a whole bunch of stuff comes through your head. Now, it doesn't just stay in your head. It circulates throughout your body. And then once it is down into the cell, the semen, and that interacts, with an egg in the woman that you're with, all right, that's transmitted. And, of course, the child grows up, and we can understand the implications of that. So as a consequence of what we experience, all right, we see that there is a definite correlation, if not direct, of the trauma that we experience in slavery to our resistance, the need for us to resist, because we don't want to feel this hurt. We don't want to feel this harm. We want to be human, treated like human beings. Consequently, out of the need for that, all right, we rebel or we resist, all right? Sometimes this resistance, can take individual levels and sometimes a social level. When it begins to take the social level, all right, then we see these movements, the PGRNA, all right, the Black Panther Party, all right, the Nation of Islam. These are the manifestation of resistance to the harm that was created to us, all right, by the abuse that was sustained over hundreds of years of enslavement, Jim Crow, police brutality, on up to the present time. And so what and Cobra, who, initiated this report, all right, and got this and examined, and they got the report circulated for anybody in the family that would like to get a copy of this report. It's free. All right, you can go to www.officialandcobraonline. That's official, OFFICIAL, and Cobra, NCOBRA, online, ONLINE, .org. It's all one word except for the dots, all right? And you will, go into the website, and then you'll see the harm report. You just click on it, and you can download the report and read it for yourself. It's relatively short, about maybe 40, 50 pages, about that, and then some pre-words, forewords, and then some post-words. And you'll get an idea of what they conclude. But anyway, what they proposed in their report, and they call it section inclusion, what they wanted was a discussion on health disparities of the Black community, to include the fact that this community and only this community has experienced trauma for over 400 years, or historical trauma over 400 years that negatively impact our health. The resources that they have identified, they said the resources they wanted should be directly to mitigate the effect of the historical trauma. In other words, the transgenerational transmission of trauma and the transgenerational epigenetics inherited injury. In other words, that injury are the trauma and the sustained injury, and that goes into the health area based on the health items that I said a little earlier. They also said that research on transgenerational epigenetics inheritance that should be done on more animals, and that specific research is on our community. Now, I want to warn you about this. The European, how they look at scientists, is odd, not odd. It's a sort of a trial and error thing. They have to identify what is ailing you, come up with the manifestations that it see. In other words, what is the chemical manifestations of this, my diagnosis of an injury that you have. All right. And then the thing is to give you a drug. Well, they have to, when they give you the drug has to be something that they submit and see to other human beings. In other words, they have what they call trials. They give the drug to other human beings after they studied it, after they put it in mice, then apparently it goes to human beings. And then they look at the effects. If the effects are mild, you see very little effect, and then they market it to rest of human beings as a mitigation to the problem that you are experiencing as a result of this trauma. And that's essentially how they do the research, right? So we just copied that, but, you know, that's, you know, until we know something better, once we go back home or have some people back home come here with that, with the knowledge of how to diagnose without tearing you apart, this is what we have to do. We need our schools to be able to engage in this. Then they want the awareness section, and that is the federal government to provide awareness information, all right, and possible ways that our community can individually address this reality. In other words, we want the resources. We want you to do some research. We'll take care of some of the research. We want to come together and then show us what we need to do to remedy this, because we know from the research that you did on the mice, all right, and other animals that they could come back to normal given certain conditions. And, of course, the most important is the what they call the decolonization of health. In particular, African and African-centered healing modalities, which is what I was speaking of, must be understood, accepted, adopted, funded, and utilized in an effort to heal our community from the centuries of terror, trauma, and the centuries of abuse. Now, these are five things that this is what ANCOBRA, from their report, cites. Now, we can, from our experience, you know, it's going to be probably a rainy case in hell before the European come off of and get off of their control that they currently have. And the trauma, they could care less about, you know, the experience that we have. They'll make causes to try to admit, particularly the Democratic Party seems to do that. Republican Party says, I don't care about it, but the Democratic Party are just as vile as the Republican Party. They just slick. All right. What ANCOBRA did, and this was, ANCOBRA came out in about the mid to late 1980s. All right, so this is back there when they came out with these demands. All right, and what they proposed was that a reparation plebiscite. Now let me tell you what that is. A plebiscite is nothing more than a referendum in a form of a referendum, and that is to vote. And you would vote on a topic that you would think would remediate something that you feel is wrong as a consequence of years of trauma to a group. All right. So they said a plebiscite. Now, I want you to keep in mind, this is what ANCOBRA said back there 30-some years ago, is that after they looked at, from our study that we looked at now, and which we didn't have then, but now there's a call right now, all right, begin to look at a plebiscite, all right, which would address what they feel, the people feel, are remediations of the problem cause and make demands on that which created the problem, and that is, at that time, the federal government, state governments, particularly during the Jim Crow era, and in the South, primarily in the South, because that's where most of the Africans were enslaved, would make demands on the government and institutions which were responsible and sustained that institution of slavery, all right, to remediate these efforts. All right, so what ANCOBRA proposed, that number one, from their plebiscite model, is that there should be a number of educational meetings to be held nationwide, all right, to make sure that the people who were affected had information and were able to make informed, all right, conclusions based on what information they were able to get from their education, all right, and then make demands on the federal, all of the levels of government that was wholly involved, all right, in this massacre and trauma that existed, you know, several hundred years ago. Now, let me say a little bit more on that, and then, Brother, I'll stop so that you might have another question that you might want to do. What in pushing the plebiscite, they were not just pushing the plebiscite saying that the government should do this. They was also mindful that the government might have no interest in doing this. But their job was to educate, all right? And you might say, well, why? All right. Keep in mind that we didn't have a choice when they kidnapped us from Africa. If we were victims, all right, of war, tragedy of war, all right, we didn't have a choice of what we wanted to do as a consequence of becoming prisoners of war or victims of kidnapping. After the slave period, after the Civil War, the war between the brothers from the North and the white brothers and their white brothers in the South, we still were not given a choice, all right, to determine our fate. I mean, they took us, they stopped slavery and said, you are free now, and gave us no resources. They did promise us 40 acres and a mule, never delivered. And so we were left there. And what we had to do was do sharecropping, because that was the only thing that we knew how to do in order to try to make some living, worked out, negotiated. You might call it negotiation, but it wasn't a negotiation. And for some of us that didn't want that because they had experienced slavery, you know, just a year or two earlier, all right, they had these laws where they could kidnap you, vagrancy laws. They could kidnap you, put you in prison because they say you're supposed to be working and you didn't work, all right, and then contract you out, all right, to a former slave master that you might have left as a consequence of being freed, so-called, all right. So, again, we didn't have no choice, all right. So what Encobra's saying that we need the choice to do what we want to do. And now when we – and what are those choices that we want to do, all right? The plebiscite would address what Cobra calls several things, all right? And this is because of the different experiences that each of us experienced. Now, what I mean by that, real clearly. Now, we know that we call, you know, we make jokes of it, you know, but we know, and Malcolm said it, you know, you had the house Negro and you had the fields Negro, all right? So you had people that was working close to the master, all right, and probably eating a little bit better than the people out in the field, all right? Each one had a different perspective, all right, how they were impacted by slavery. Then you had freemen. They were people who were not enslaved. They were Africans, but they were not enslaved. They could have been released. They could have paid for their, we don't know. They were, you know, we know there was Africans who were here before the Europeans, and some of those Africans, all right, did maintain and battle the European. And in order to not have them disrupt the slave system created by the European made peace with them, or treaty, so-called, all right, and gave them their little land. Some of them are called Maroons. We know that very mostly happened in the Caribbean countries. But also it happened here in the States. The Gullah Geechee people in the South Carolina coast, you know, who ran and escaped from South Carolina down into Florida, and Florida was held at that time by the Spaniards. All right, European Americans had no jurisdiction there. All right, but they wanted to still capture the slaves who had left or who had ran away. Well, they fought back. They fought back with the Native Americans who had also fought the white folks who were trying to relocate them to the Midwest. And so there was always resistance in a big way, you know, to the enslavement and the occupation, I guess, that the Native Americans experienced. So consequently, we had different experience. Those different experiences, it wasn't an either-or situation, that we had different experiences. So what Encobra says that because of our different experiences, there may be some people, and this should be highlighted in your plebiscite, who may feel a need that they want to stay around. They don't necessarily want to separate. They might see themselves as making some inroads and they wanted the resources to be able to make those inroads when needed if the legislation process, all right, took too long to make them full citizens. You still have that tendency. We might associate that with the freedmen who were allowed to not be enslaved, and maybe also the House Negro, all right, might also be that. And then you had those who wanted to separate, which might be the group of folks who came out of the period who were field Negroes. I'm just giving examples. I'm not characterizing because I don't know, but we know that we see those tendencies. And these are the people who say, I don't want to have anything to do with the Europeans. He lies. I saw what he did to the Native Americans. I don't want to have anything. I want to separate. All right? Separate either here in the confines of continental United States or go to some other country. All right? And separate. I just don't, you know, other than at Africa. All right? And then, of course, you had those who want to what we call rematriate, go back to the motherland. All right, I said rematriate. Sister corrected me, is that we call Africa the motherland, and repatriate would mean we would call it the fatherland. So I use the term rematriation. All right, going back to the motherland, and that the U.S. provide resources to have you satisfactory integrate back into your community. You know, that you can identify, or a community that you can identify with. All right. And that this is how they saw the plebiscite formation happen. All right. And that it wasn't an either or thing, that it was that, you know, because of these expressions had to be expressions real, because we were talking about really self-determination. How did you determine what it is that you want to do? Well, we determine that from our experience. Well, you may experience one thing, so that means then you can't expect one, all right, and a majority vote say that we're going in this direction. No, the vote is how we as a group, all right, say we want to go. Some of them may want to repatriate. Some may want to stay here. Some say we don't want to go that far, but we do want to be separated. And you have that right to do that. And so and Cobra saw that. Now, how does that tie into some of the things that did you have a question, brother? I thought I heard it sounded like you had a question or something to ask. I know I've been talking a lot. You know, I can get winded sometimes. You've been sharing
some very good information. And our experience with the Europeans suggested there's a lot of things that they will not make happen. And so what are the
right.
black man and woman's options? What options do we have?
Well, we have those. Well, I think it's only one option, all right? And that option, and I think this is one where we get into the recommendation that we see coming from NCOBRA. And NCOBRA looks at it because in addition to the plebiscite, asking people what they want to do, what Dr. Imari Obadeli, who was in the PGRNA, all right, also put forth was that we develop an economic development council. And what this economic development council was set up to have folks, all right, donate, all right, the same way in which members of our ULU donate now, all right, to a fund, and that this fund would be collectively or cooperatively manage, all right, to address what is needed in order to sustain what it is that we want to do. Now, if we take a look now at ULU is a mass-based organization of individuals and institutions, business as well, and that what we ask is the pooling of our resources and the identification of meaningful economic projects, businesses, that helps to enrich. So therefore, one of the things that NCOBRA years ago and currently addresses is the fact that we can't depend on the trust of the European. So therefore, we're going to do for self. And if we are spending in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 trillion annually before COVID, then obviously, you know, we are a very modest percent of that can really go into funding the kind of economic activity and resources to address not only the injuries that we have, all right, but also the eventually recovering some of the lost wealth that they stole from as a consequence of the enslavement. All right. Now, when I say control of the lost wealth, all right, now we know that we have an economic system, and inside that economic system, global, all right, is resources. Some of those resources, all right, or assets are solid. They're really there. You can't really liquidate them and transfer them, but you got some that we spend that can be liquidated, but you can re-solidify, okay, all right, into resources. No resources can be used to go and help build, all right? So what we have is when we look at the things that we're trying to do, and Cobra set up creating cells or what we call Ulu-based communities throughout the country, Central and South America, on the African continent. Now, remember now what the Pebblesite movement said is that you may want to stay here, you may want to set up your own territory, or you may want to rematriate back to the African continent. Well, very cleverly, Ulu has looked at the economics, which basically laid a foundation about other spheres of activity that you see among people, all right, is that we can lay down those activities here by controlling the aspects of our economy globally, all right, by on the African continent. We can be right here in the Caribbean, here, all right. All we have to do is set up the economic infrastructure that ties these together. Now, once they're tied together, they are solidified, all right. And then at the same time, it gives us leverage in our operation. Operation with the West, because you can't trust the European. All right. If you say you can trust the European, you know, God help you. All right. But at least we're protecting our own selves by setting up our own infrastructure, all right, to allow us to be able to economically operate, all right, be able to transfer the wealth that is created by the economic engine and operation, pass down to other generations. And included in that would be the health necessary to address the trauma that we are experiencing, to set up the schools and training that is necessary to our health professionals, all right, to address the trauma that we are experiencing, and then to solidify us to make sure that the traumas that we experience, as the Jews say, never happen again. And let me stop here, brother, in case you got another question to pop up.
No, family, we've got about 2 minutes, and I take it that you're certainly paying attention and taking notes. And once again, I want to remind you that it will be archived on Blog Talk. And there's so much that's here that we've really got to delve into and pay attention to. And I appreciate what you just talked about the economic program of Us Lifting Us that's necessary, it's vital. And you talk about how the economics would also help to provide the resources to do research so that we can, and especially ourselves, can delve into this with greater clarity that we have researched. And I think you mentioned earlier about mice and how mice responded to better nutrition. And would that be the same with us?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, we have seen it, and you might have seen it. You know, people are particularly people who are, you know, was on a heavy meat diet, you know, and transferred to organic and vegan or vegetarian lifestyle, all right, begin to, you know, lose that obesity that they might have or fat, all right, been able to operate, respond a little bit more clearly than what they have, not sick as often as they have. So we can see that. All right. And then with the constant influx of healthy nutrient substances that we ingest, all right, that will begin to address the damage that might have been done to the signaling in our DNA. All right. Because you know that if you eat well and you calm, you exercise and you do yoga, what have it, you calm yourself. Well, when you calm yourself, you're not only calming yourself, you're calming your body and your cells and everything else. And then you know that when you exercise, you know, and you get rid of toxins as you exercise, well, some of those toxins are also the toxins associated, you know, at the DNA level. We usually don't think about that. And so because it's total. And so, yeah, the change in our lifestyle and what we have going on now is to prevent the continuation of the trauma created. So if you stop that, all right, you can't do that anymore to me, and then you begin to train people a healthier lifestyle, you can see it go away because we saw it go away in the mice. And I think that's even with the Jewish population, particularly those who have seen that and begin to address it by using their own doctors, and which is why they have, you know, certain kinds of foods that they eat, some things they don't eat. And I think that partly came from not only history, but also a need to recover from the injuries that they suffered under Nazi Germany.
Brother, you provided some.
Go ahead, brother.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes, you did answer the question, and you've answered a lot. And we really need to continue this conversation because most of our people are not aware of this. And as you talked about the epigenetics and how that affects how behaviors and environment can cause changes that affect the way your genes work, and that's real serious. And I appreciate, you know, the last couple of minutes when you talked about how when we go to the higher level with regard to our diet, and you mentioned us pooling economic resources to be able to do our own research so that we can get a better clarity of how epigenetics work. And also, I appreciate you mentioning calmness, because that's essential for our people. And the ancient Africans said, when you have mastered calmness, you have mastered one of the keys to life. And Brother Shabaka, we need to stay on for another hour, but what we have to do is get you to come back. And any closing things you want to say about this epigenetics? Well, this is a very, very serious topic that affects our life in so many ways, as you have discussed. You got any closing words you want to give us about the conversation tonight?
Well, thank you, brother, for the opportunity to address as we go off. Family, keep in touch with what NCOBRA is doing. Keep in mind that NCOBRA is a part of Hulu. And I'm sure some people haven't thought about that. We're a part of Hulu, and of course Hulu is a part of NCOBRA. All right, and so we work together, as I said. It's some information and history that they laid out, the research that they've done. We had to go to the European Johns Hopkins because Howard didn't come by, and Harry didn't comply, and so we had to go to the European. We got some information. We now have some information that we can take back to those institutions and tell them and demand for them that they need to begin to serve our needs. In the meantime, support Hulu. Is trying to do this economic model that it has. This change and transformation is going to make it much more powerful to begin to address those kinds of things that I cited, particularly deal with the trauma, to deal with supporting our own institutions. If the ones we got right now don't do it, we'll create new institutions that will do it and then move from there. But thank you, brother, for giving me the opportunity to talk and have this conversation with you.
And thank you once again, brother, because you continue to bring such good vital information. And family members, just keep make note of what Brother Shabaka talked about, the connection and the working together, us listening, us as well as NCOBRA. And this is a very serious matter because it's about our health. If we don't survive, then how do we get free? And how do we change the transgenerational transfer of genes that's been affected by various things from the past and presently. And so with Ulu and NCOBRA and with us working together, us lifting us, we've got the capacity to be winners. So let's be a winner. And we look forward to you joining us next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another powerful conversation with Dare to Win. We're a winner. Behave and think like that because it affects your genes, it affects your behavior. And we look forward to you joining us again. And once again, we thank all of the audience by telephone and by internet radio. And once again, thank you again, Brother Shabaka.
Thank you. You're welcome, brother.